When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From the women's code to the men's, and the AFL men's final is finals set to get underway later on this week on Thursday night. Four big games coming your way on SEN through AFL Nation, and one of the experts, man of many, many talents, is Josh Jenkins, and he's with us here on SEN this evening to chat about the finals a week out. Evening, JJ, how's things?
Going well, thanks, Geordie. Almost said morning, I don't know why. A little bit off with the fairies at the end of a long Sunday, but things are going well, and a bit of focus on the AFLW, just watching the Boomers finish off a disappointing World Cup campaign, and then we'll get stuck right into the footy finals.
Yeah, what have you, mate? We're going to chat a bit of basketball later on, but we'll ask you as well, because you've got the basketball pedigree. What have you made of the Boomers at the World Cup, and particularly the loss the other night to Slovenia?
Well, we went in, I guess, as a red-hot chance of even playing off for the gold medal, and now we're going to finish God knows where. We're way down the pecking order. It's going to really hurt us in terms of the world rankings. We're ranked third at the moment. Well, we won't be after this. So, yeah, we've been so out of sync. We've got too many guys just not willing to take open shots. So it's been bitterly disappointing, and we haven't been able to defend, even though we're up by 20 against Georgia, but we're going to give up about 85 points against Georgia. So another terrible defensive performance. So we need to get our act together for 12 months' time.
Let's chat about the footy. Now, earlier in the show, to start the program, I gave a list of players, one per team, to who I think are some of the role players in the finals sides who can have sort of an understated impact, but are maybe the unsung heroes, the unheralded stars of the teams. Now, I'm not going to ask you to go through one for each team, but if there is one maybe that stands out among the eight clubs in the finals, who is someone who might not be an A-grade sort of talent, might not be an All-Australian, but is sort of in that second or third bracket of player among the eight teams in the finals whose role in the team is unsung but is so important to how their team functions?
Well, I guess his role, the guy I'm thinking of for Collingwood, his role doesn't necessarily go under the radar because he does everything he does is sort of quite athletic, and it's a bit of a highlight. But I think if Jamie Elliott can kick some goals from half chances, then Collingwood, you know, much is made of Melbourne's lack of firepower. Well, Collingwood don't really have a dominant forward line either. They do rely on the speed of the ball from up the ground. They love to run back toward goal. You think of Majacek and Bobby Hill and these guys running back towards goal. So I think often Elliott plays as the genuine closest to forward goal for them. So he sort of plays as a bit of an undersized, old-school full forward at times. He sets up 80, 90 metres away from the ball. You'll often see him disconnected from the rest of the Collingwood 17. So if he can have, you know, low possessions but high impact, and, you know, I'm thinking sort of 8 to 10 possessions but kick 3 or 4, then that's going to give Collingwood so much extra when it comes to being able to put a score on the board, because we know, generally speaking, in finals, you know, we don't need to score 14, 15 goals to win these games. You only really need to score, you know, 10, 11, 12 goals to get it done. So if Elliott can kick, you know, bob up and kick 3 in a couple of finals, then that's going to go a long way to Collingwood kicking a big enough score.
Do the teams who score less, you know, the generally lower scoring teams, Melbourne springs to mind, St Kilda aren't particularly high scoring, Collingwood you mentioned, are they almost not better suited to play finals, but are they more, does their game style maybe align a little bit better to what we end up seeing in finals matches?
I think you would probably land there. Well, I think you would probably say that your statement's truest, but I think also you still need guys in low-scoring games to be able to take their chances, and That's why Melbourne's loss of Jake Melksham is actually really, really critical because, yes, of course, you know, he probably would play a bit of a defensive forward type role on Darcy Moore in a first final and maybe Harris Andrews if they cross paths or, you know, an Alia. So his role is crucial. But what he also does really, really well is take his chances. He did have one game where he kicked one goal five or something like that, but that's been an aberration. He can put the ball through the big sticks on his right foot, on his left foot. He's very good snap on his right and his left, and he can kick goals from high marks, but also from on the ground. So yeah, I know we sound like we're talking about, you know, a multiple All Australian, but he has become really important for Melbourne. So his loss is really important because if Melbourne and St Kilda are going to play these low-scoring dour finals, well, when you get your chance, you need someone to go back and kick a goal. And if St Kilda are going to have a game where it's 60-50, well, they need Max King to go back and kick truly when he gets an opportunity because he might only get two chances for the whole night.
Yeah.
And that's where you need guys who can go back and kick accurately.
Can it also be a risk playing that style? I mean, you know, finals games can be cagey and low scoring because it is a final and everything's a bit more intense. But if there is a team who, you know, goes into a game wanting to play a bit more defensive and lower scoring to try and shut the game up, but it fails on them and then the opposition is able to blow out the scoreboard. And that's always the risk you run, but is it how often is it likely to be seen, I guess, in finals matches?
Yeah, I don't think anyone is really going to change who they are. Well, in fact, I'm sure no one's going to change their identity at this point. No one's going to really do anything different, certainly from a radical point of view. I think teams are going to be, you know, you do have a little bit longer to prepare for your opponent, so you might find some things that you are sort of really keen on exploring. But for the most part, I think you just you got to lock in on what you do as a team. You've got to go after, you know, exactly what you do as a team. And what if you're a Melbourne and you're a team who might not have the most potent forward line, but you've got an unbelievable midfield group and you've got an unbelievable defensive group, well, that's what you do. You lean into that. You say, well, we're just not going to get scored against. We're not going to leak easy goals. And we're going to give our forwards just endless opportunities to put a score on the board because that's what Melbourne did in their premiership season. Sure, they had Bailey Fritch in good form. Ben Brown kicked a few in the prelim and the grand final. But if you've got a forward line that needs great opportunities, well, that's what you need to give them. You need to give them repeat opportunities. You need to lock the ball in your half. And that's what Melbourne does best, probably better than anyone else. And that type of game style has stood up for them in finals before and for a lot of other teams.
You're doing Melbourne Collingwood, are you, for AFL Nation?
Yes, I believe so.
Excellent. How was, firstly, actually, the news that broke about an hour or so ago is that Nick Dacos won't be playing in this finals match. He's out with that knee joint injury. So Jared Wade, the high performance manager at Collingwood, he was on a video on Collingwood's website earlier this evening saying that Nick Dacos won't make it for that final. Darcy Moore and Nathan Murphy are available, but Dacos is out along with Ash Johnson and also Will Kelly. No Nick Dacos, that's a massive blow, but they do have Moore and Murphy for them, the Pies. But, I mean, they've been without Nick Dacos for a couple of weeks, but now that they are into the finals, you said Melksham's a big loss for Melbourne, but now Dacos' continued absence for Collingwood. How have they managed that loss and how will it continue to be managed now in finals?
Yeah, I mean, no surprise to me. You only had to start to join the dots and, you know, maybe because I've been inside rehab. I've done complete a rehab. When you know that he hasn't run up until today or yesterday, I mean, there's no chance on God's green earth he's going to be ready to play a game. Now, the question, I guess, was would they risk him and just put him out there and say, well, you know what, we know you're underdone, but we'll play you. But isn't that the point of qualifying in the top two and the top four, that to give yourself that second chance opportunity to not have to take unnecessary risk? You know, if it's an elimination final, if it's Carlton, you're probably having to take that risk because there's no tomorrow. Whereas, you know, you don't want to lean in and rely on that rest or that second opportunity. But there's no need to just completely risk people that aren't able to be there, because you know what happens to them as well is they don't perform, and often they get subbed out. We saw it in the grand final last year. Sam Reid played when clearly he probably shouldn't have played, and he wasn't right to go, and he had to be subbed out at halftime. So, you know, I think whenever you risk players, particularly players that have got an opportunity to have an extra 7 or 14 days, because the beauty is for Collingwood, if they win, they get an extra 14 days for Nick Dacos to be absolutely prime for a prelim final. And that's what would have ultimately, in my view, won, made the decision for them. Sure, he hasn't done the right amount of work to be able to play, but also if they are able to win, then he gets 14 days extra to look after himself and probably get himself cherry ripe for a prelim final.
It's a big night for Carlton on Friday night. They return to the finals for the first time in a decade. They take on Sydney in the elimination final. How would Carlton be, or how are you assessing the match actually for Carlton? So against last year's runners-up, they come into this game with one of the best, I mean, they lost in the last round of the season, but before that, the best form line in the AFL this season. Are there any fears maybe over Carlton now coming back to this stage? Do you think they'll be daunted at all? What's your read on Carlton for Friday?
I like the matchup for Carlton. I mean, if you want to be a pessimist from a Sydney point of view, like, they are very lucky to be in the finals. You know, they're an interchange infringement, and they're a, you know, they're a terrible decision by a goal umpire and the arc system from actually being in. So, you know, they're quite lucky to be in. Sure, they've won plenty of games on the way home to make it, but you can certainly mount the argument they don't deserve to be there. So Carlton come in as good a form, if not better form, than anyone. So I really like this matchup from Carlton's point of view. I don't really think I don't really think there's a great matchup for Charlie Curnow. There's not many teams who have a good matchup for him, I might add. But, you know, Dane Rampey's probably going to take the job. He's slowed down a little bit, Rampy. At his absolute best, he probably would be as good a matchup for a Curnow as anyone in the competition. But I reckon he's just lost that half a step. He's had a really disjointed season. So I really like the look of this for Carlton. There's going to be that natural anxiety for them and their fans, probably more their fans more so than their players. But I just can't wait to get home and watch that one on the TV. It's going to be, you know, 90, low 90s, maybe mid 90,000s. It's going to be largely Carlton fans, and it could be the spectacle of the weekend from a game style point of view, because Sydney love that handball receive, that kicking game, and Carlton play a really attractive brand of footy as well when they get on that loose ball, and the contested possession works fantastic with their midfielders. So looking forward to that game the most, probably.
How far do you think Carlton can go?
I truly think they can make a grand final. And once you make a grand final, you know, it's a 50-50 ball game. It's a flip of the coin on the day. So I truly believe they can get there. You know, so that's winning. You know, three finals. Whether you can win four, who knows? You know, it's grand final day. Anything can happen. But I really think that their best is good enough. But equally, it wouldn't stun me. If they lost on Friday night, it just wouldn't stun me. You know, Sydney have been there, done that. They made a grand final last year. So, you know, in a do or die game, anything can happen. That's why I think they're probably as equally likely to lose this week as they are to get to a grand final and win a grand final. So I think the sky's the limit for them. But from where they come from, it's fantastic for Blues fans to be able to be in this position.
St Kilda will be calling the MCG home for the weekend, their Saturday afternoon game against the Giants in the elimination final. They obviously, you know, Marvel Stadium is their home stadium, but going to the MCG now, we do expect a pretty big crowd from what we see, what we can sort of gather from the crowd numbers and the ticket sales, even though they're playing at their sort of non-home venue against a team interstate. But the Saints, with Ross Lyon at the helm in the finals, how much does their game plan have to change going from Marvel to the MCG?
Look, really, if you look at their game style, I think playing at the MCG should probably help them, because they, you know, we spoke to Callum Wilkie last week on on Drive, and he mentioned a willingness from the St Kilda players to be more open to handball receive and speeding the game up when they've got the ball. They admit that they went away from their attacking brand and they went away from their ball movement, you know, midway through the year, and then they've gone back and lent into that. So at the MCG, you know, I think of the great Hawthorn teams, you know, I think of the teams who have made the MCG home, their strength is making the ground really, really big and spacious when they've got the ball, but also being able to close it down and make the ground quite small when the other team has got the ball. So, you know, if you're at the game on the weekend and you're sitting up quite high, you might be up the top and you think you've got the worst seats in the house. Well, you've actually got a really good view to be able to sit up there and look at how the game looks. So, you know, if you're supporting St Kilda and the game looks really spread out and there's plenty of space when St Kilda have got the ball, then good things will happen. And equally, have a look what it looks like when GWS have got the ball. If the ground looks nice and compact and the players are close together, then I think good things are going to happen for St Kilda. So it's fascinating way to see how they transition to the MCG, because we say they're a couple of goals better at the MCG, but they've only played, sorry, at Marvel Stadium than they are at the MCG, but they've only played, I think, once or twice at the G this year. So it's a small sample size to make that kind of decision on.
And on the Saturday night, Brisbane versus Port Adelaide, it's probably been, I mean, both teams finished with the same win-loss record. They're both in the top three on the ladder. So there's a lot similar about them, but I guess the way that they've ended their season is from the start of the season to the back half of the season, Port Adelaide probably started the year as one of the absolute favourites in premiership contention and then just faltered a little bit, ever so slightly, not too drastically at the back end of the season. Brisbane, on the other hand, have been in really good form. So we might have flipped our general consensus from Port Adelaide to Brisbane about who's better. The game is in Brisbane. Brisbane finished second. But how do the two teams match up? Because there's some key matchups in inside 50 in particular, and Port Adelaide without a couple of big names up there, which might help Brisbane. But can Port Adelaide travel to Queensland and knock off the Lions?
I think they can. I don't think they will. I'm not in love with Port Adelaide's form line, and I don't think their personnel is where it needs to be for a team who wants to make and win a grand final. I just don't see the weapons in their front half. I believe Charlie Dixon's not going to play. Todd Marshall, we've been waiting and waiting, and he's made some significant strides, but is he ready to jump up and take over a qualifying final? I know forwards don't really have amazing records in big finals, but can he jump up and kick a bag of four or five? I'm not sure he can, particularly if he's got a Harris Andrews or even a Jack Payne for company. So I don't love what Port Adelaide have in front of the ball. And equally, I think they're a little vulnerable, as you mentioned, behind the footy against Danaher and Hipwood. And Jack Gunston's found a little bit of form if he can get himself right. Otherwise, I think, you know, McCarthy and Charlie Cameron's the absolute obvious. So Brisbane's forward line is really diverse. It's really dynamic. They've got guys who are capable. I think Cam Rayner does a lot more than the stat sheet tells you. He's competitive in the air. He's a fierce tackler. You can't tackle him. And I think he adds a fair bit to that forward line and that forward half of the ground the same way that Zach Bailey does. And I think Zach Bailey's a candidate to really tear a finals campaign apart as well. He's got all the tools. He's got burst. He's great in a contest, and he's a goal kicker. So, you know, if he can be one of those guys that might average 18 to 20 disposals and sort of kick 8 to 10 goals across a September campaign, then Brisbane are well on their way. I reckon I'm certainly in the camp of the Lions in that game, and I reckon they're probably my number one seed.
JJ, we won't keep you any longer. You're back on Drive again this week?
Yes, one and a half more weeks, and then the captain of Australia will be back from the World Cup. So people are missing him. Even Sarah Good was kind enough to be disappointed that when I was in the chair when she came into the studio and it wasn't Gazy. So people aren't hiding their disappointment, but 1.5 more weeks and then the captain will be back.
All right. Thank you, Josh. We'll hear you throughout the week.
See you, mate.
Josh Jenkins with us here on SEN on your Sunday night, and yes, on the run home, but also part of our AFL Nation commentary team as well, and he'll be there for the D's versus Pies clash coming up in a couple of days from now.